Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Well, I wonder how much attention you pay to other people's body language, or for that matter, your own too. Because if it's happening in others, it's also happening in you, even when you are speaking. Our bodies send an amazing array of non-verbal messages that perfectly sum up how we feel, who's in charge, and even hint at whether we'd really be rather somewhere else. Experts estimate that maybe half of the way we communicate is through non-verbal signals. Simple gestures like a smile, a shrug of the shoulders, or a roll of the eyes tend to be body language signals that most people can interpret pretty easily. The eyes flicking out over your shoulder as someone looks for someone else to speak to at a party, you know the deal. But there are a whole host of more subtle examples of body language. Like, for example, the direction our feet are pointing when we're talking to someone that can send extraordinarily powerful messages. Tonight we're going to explore the different ways we do communicate with our bodies and the kinds of non-verbal signals that we send out to the world. How many of these signals are deliberate and how many are unintentional? If you're bored by someone, is it impossible to fake it? And how can we learn to better control our body language and read the signals that other people are sending us? To answer all these questions and more, I hope I'm joined by Sophie Zadeh, who's a Perth-based non-verbal communication specialist and founder of My Alchemy, which coaches people in body language and helps them become better communicators. Sophie, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening. Thanks, Bill, and thanks for inviting me, and hello, listeners.
Well, yes, exactly. Can we kick this off? What is nonverbal communication anyway? What are we talking about here?
Well, nonverbal communication is how we deliberately or inadvertently communicate both feelings and emotions through our body. It's really an umbrella term, and that covers a few key areas. And the most obvious one, which would spring to most people's mind, would be body language. So body language is about our gesture, our stance, posture, even proxemics, which is our movement within space, you know, how close we are to somebody or something, the distance that we're happy to be with, like social space as well. And the other thing it covers is touch. Now, another key area of nonverbal communication, which is equally as significant, is facial expressions. So within our face, we have different muscles and different groups of muscles that work together to create different facial movements. And specific combinations of those movements are seen in distinct emotions. So the emotions I'm talking about really are the emotions that are our basic emotions, those emotions that are important to us in terms of our survival and group fitness. Another area of nonverbal communication, which a lot of people don't really think of as being nonverbal, but it's our vocal delivery. So how we actually deliver the words. Mm-hmm. And that includes anything that's not an exact word. So it could be things like tone, speed, volume, intonation, inflection, and even ums and ahs are considered to be nonverbal.
Oh, yes, the um and the ah can be devastating, can't it?
It can, yeah, absolutely. And then one other area, I mean, there are other areas as well if we're thinking beyond the body, like signals on signs, for example, imagery. But the other area that I work with is outward aspects. So this is all about how we present ourselves to other people through the clothes that we wear, the colours that we wear, how we do hair, makeup, tattoos, piercings. But it can extend beyond that. So it's to do with anything that's associated with you as a person. So the car that you drive, for example, the bags that you carry, that kind of thing. So that's a basic overview of nonverbal communication. And how we use it is our bodies respond to either external stimuli or internal emotions. So in the case of external stimuli, just imagine if something was to fall in front of you right now from the ceiling, a natural reaction to that would be to jump back. And that's as a means of protecting yourself. It's an innate response that aids survival. And in terms of reacting to internal emotions, imagine somebody receiving some sad news. A natural response to that would be to retract. So you can imagine like a curling inwards of the body in a kind of like a defeated position. And we might also see the expression on the face change. We might see hands going up to the face, either one hand or both hands. So these are typical reactions that we have when we
Is it? We talk about body language. I mean, is it a universal language as such, or is it actually culturally bound? In other words, it can only be really understood if you're innately or very familiar with the culture that you're in.
Well, it's both, really. We know that some body language and some expressions are universal. And the reason we know this is because of studies on twins, very young infants, studies of primitive remote tribes who haven't had much or little social interaction with the rest of the world. So they haven't seen TV, etc., and they wouldn't have learnt it from different cultures. Also from studies with congenitally blind people. So people who have been blind since birth and haven't been able to learn these behaviours from other people. So there is certainly a lot of body language which isn't universal, and some which is. And the universal body language and expressions tends to be those that are important to us in terms of survival of the species. One example of universal body language is the gesture for pride. So you can imagine like people watching a match and their team scores, then you'd see people's arms naturally going up into the air, people elevating themselves. So that's the universal gesture of pride. And defeat is the opposite. Defeat is when our body kind of crumples in on itself. In terms of if you have a big loss, you might even fall to the floor and your body curls up. So we know from studies on congenitally blind people that congenitally blind athletes, when winning a race, they display pride in the same way as sighted athletes, and the same with defeat. So defeat is exactly the same in congenitally blind.
Well, in other words, they raise their arms in the air.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, there are other examples as well. So say with touch is universal. It's important for everybody, and it's important because of something called oxytocin, which is released when touch takes place. But some cultures prefer a handshake, so Western cultures, for example, whereas other cultures prefer a hug or kissing. So the touch part is universal, but how we do it is cultural. There are also differences in the amount of eye contact. So for some cultures, it can be quite rude for a child, for example, to make direct eye contact with an adult or someone they should be respecting. So there are differences within that universality.
Yes, that's true. And in Anglo culture, we're often told, he was a terrific person. He always looked you in the eye.
Yes,
whereas that's not necessarily an instance of respect in some other cultures, is it?
No, and also there's the thing around deception where he didn't look me in the eye. We taught that, but it's actually just a myth.
Okay, do men and women use body language in different ways? I guess they do they?
Well, yes and no again. I mean, one of the interesting differences between men and women is when reading body language, different parts of the brain are activated. So in women, more parts of the brain are activated, in men, less parts. But that doesn't mean to say that women are necessarily better than men at it. Women tend to be intuitively better at picking up on people's emotions, but that's probably a case of social roles having an impact there and they're more used to that.
Yeah.
But men can be really good at it too. But in terms of displaying nonverbal behaviour, I mean, there are behaviours that have the same meaning, but it looks slightly different between men and women. So an example of that would be neck touching, which is an indicator of stress. So when women touch their necks, it tends to be the back or the side of their neck, more like a light, gentle rub. But men tend to grip the front of the neck and grip it not aggressively, but more aggressively than a gentle touch.
Is that right? And, okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And women often touch, again, it's the same stress behavior. The area, we call it the suprasternal notch. So this is a little triangle area roundabout, you know, where you wear jewelry. So if you're wearing a necklace. So sometimes they cover either the suprasternal notch there in the middle or play with the necklace. We don't see men do that much. And then there's also posture, which is interesting. And I think this comes as a result of when girls go through puberty, they tend to become more self-conscious of their bodies. And at that point, their bodies curl inward. So imagine, I talked about pride and defeat. So kind of like a defeated position in a way, just slightly with the shoulders curling. And that just indicates a lack of self-confidence, really. But unfortunately, that can become a habit, so it can become their normal stance. And unfortunately, a lot of women can carry that defeated stance through their adult lives too. I remember seeing a picture from a friend on Facebook, and she'd posted her and her colleagues, who were about 20 of them, and they were just out for a night out at the movies. And there was only one or two of them that were actually standing upright in a confident stance, and all the rest of them looked defeated. You know, their posture wasn't straight. It was a little bit hunched over. And it makes me a little bit sad when I see this, because, you know, if we only knew about this, then we could make a difference. And what we do with our body and expressions and our voice as well can actually affect the way that we feel. So if people knew this, by just standing a little bit more upright, they might actually experience more positive emotions and feel more confident.
Yes, it's let's discuss first impressions in a minute. Lou's just texted me saying, Phil, if someone knows body signalling, they can coach others in the use of it. For example, look at Trump's open palms moving apart and towards the camera or the audience whilst he is lying. No, notice that he moves his upper torso towards the camera, not his head, because sideways he might look corner-eyed, and that can be viewed as sly. Well, there is true, but regardless of what view you take of Donald Trump, there is a view, that is certainly true, isn't it, of a lot of public spruiking. Do you think that's the case, that people who think, my proposition here is a bit shaky, so I'll make sure that I dress it up with as much body language as possible to make it seem more reasonable?
Yes, well, body language, the more that you use, the more engaging it is, but there's a limit as well. I mean, imagine talking with your hands is great, for example, but not talking with your hands to the extent where your hands are all over the place, because that can then come across as scatty and disorganized. So there are sweet spots, but then again, there's no right or wrong with body language as well, because every context is different, and we're always what we're trying to achieve within that moment is always different too. So there are times when we might need to come across a little bit more aggressively, and other times when we might need to come across as being more subdued and reflected. So it's different in every situation. There's no right or wrong. But certainly, yes, you can learn it. And certainly, sometimes it can look a little bit over the top.
But in our culture, then, we would say that a firm handshake and looking at someone directly is a good way to make a first start, isn't it? A reasonable impression.
Yes, absolutely. But I mean, a lot of the first impression can be picked up even before that happens, because first impressions are made within seconds, or some studies have even shown they happen within a fraction of a second. And so these thin slice assessments are made of people. Basically, people are judging us from the moment they perceive us. And usually that's when they see us. So it's usually from a distance, but it can also be through other senses as well. So for example, if you heard someone yelling in the room next to you now, then, and you didn't know who that was, then you'd make a snap judgment based on what you can hear and the tone of the voice, for example. And there are times when, let's say, someone's walking behind us and if they have a pungent odor, for example, then we can make a snap judgment then before even communicating with them. But certainly there are things that we can do when we make that first impression, when we have that opportunity. And it's really important to be aware of this, because then, I mean, you can actually change what you're doing just within those first few seconds and make a better impression. So in terms of eye contact, yes, eye contact is fantastic, because like touch, which I mentioned earlier, that helps to release oxytocin. And a handshake, yes, so touch with eye contact, you get the double oxytocin there. But a firm handshake, you do have to be careful with this one, because a handshake is a cultural gesture, if you remember. Mm-hmm. So it's not universal. It's not innate within us. It's man-made. And a lot of people think that you can tell a lot from a person's handshake, but that's absolutely not true, because it's not universal. So in reality, it doesn't matter if it's a firm handshake or a weak handshake, but we do tend to get sometimes those limp handshakes, the limp cold, you know, the wet fish
yes,
handshake.
Yes, well, exactly. Well, that's dreaded, isn't it? The wet fish handshake,
yeah, it is. It can be off-putting when you get that. And if you do get that, by the way, the best thing to do is not to grimace.
Women are learning to, once upon a time, women didn't shake hands, but now they do all the time. And
yeah, that's
in
right.
fact, it's
yeah.
it's very common and very polite now to offer to shake a woman's hand, and women extend their hand for handshakes too. How did that come about, do you think?
I'm guessing really it just came about through women coming into the workforce, but of course these things
and just
take
being
time.
being more part of the workforce where these things are normal.
Yeah. I mean, from my experience, at first I worked in a lot of female-dominated areas, and handshaking didn't really take place within those. So I did a lot of work in schools, for example, and then organisations that attracted a lot of women. And it was more of a case of hugs when we met.
Yeah.
And then I worked in a male-dominated industry, and it was probably about 95% male. And it was handshakes galore, so that took a bit to get used to. You know,
yes, exactly.
You can practice your handshake, and I would recommend practicing your handshake. But it doesn't have to be firm. My advice would be to mirror the pressure that you receive. So, if it's a little bit firmer than you would normally go, then try to match that. If it's a little bit weaker, then try to match that too.
I see. It's like an arm wrestle. That's right.
Well, what you're doing there is you're saying I'm on your level. So you're evening the playing field out a little bit.
Mm. I mean, what about at the moment, of course, when handshaking isn't very popular for obvious reasons? Can we misread this if you offer your hand and someone recoils and just offers you their elbow, for example?
Yes. I mean, I know my husband has had a similar experience to that, where he went into an organisation for a meeting, and there were signs everywhere about don't do this, don't do that, use hand sanitizer, no touch, social distancing. And then someone that he was meeting from the organisation went to handshake, and my husband stepped back a little bit from that, but then got a little bit of abuse from the guy that he was meeting. So, I mean, you have to think about this. This is a guy that he's meeting for the first time, and in a way, he's just blown his first impression, but by trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is a balance here, and I think we're all still getting used to the new reality as well. But again, that's different everywhere you go. In Perth, handshakes have been back for a while now.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I'm sure they'll come back. Sophie Zada's with us, a Perth-based non-verbal communication specialist. We're talking about body language. There are some body language myths, aren't there? You know, if someone's touching their nose or their eyes, or actually their ears, a lot of people fiddle with their ears, don't they? Are these sure signs of something or not?
No, not at all. Those are body language myths. And unfortunately, there are still people teaching some of this stuff. So the nose touching, ear touching, eye direction, amount of eye contact as well, which we mentioned earlier. These are all body language myths. And when people are being deceptive, face touching can increase, but that is increasing because they are stress behaviors. And when we are being deceptive, we tend to be more stressed. It's not always the case, but this face touching and, well, touching any parts of the body tends to increase. But we could never say that that's a deception indicator, because it happens a lot of the time when we're not being deceptive too. And another thing about body language myths is that there is no single cue that can definitively say that somebody is lying. But there are some that get quite close.
Like what?
Well, my favourite is the shoulder shrug, or I should say really the single shoulder shrug.
Mm-hmm.
So a shoulder shrug is when we do both shoulders. So both shoulders rise and fall together. That's a double shrug. And we do that when we're confident in the words that we've just spoken. A single shrug is just one shoulder. And when you see just one shoulder rise, that's an indicator that the person isn't confident in the words that they've just spoken. So sometimes the words that they've spoken are significant and other times they're not. So, for example, if they say, "I didn't kill her," and they have a single shrug, then that's an indicator that they're not confident in the words that they've just spoken. So there's a red flag right there. So we can't definitively say that they're lying, but we can certainly see it as a red flag.
I wonder whether you've come across, and you're a good reader of it as well, what have you come across that you'd like to share with us? Or maybe you've got a question to ask Sophie too. Sophie Zard is my guest, a non-verbal communication, a body language specialist. Darren's on the line. Hi, Darren.
Good evening. How are we?
Not bad.
Oh, that's good. I've made some observations. Some of them are quite obvious, like where people are pointing their feet is, to me, an indication as where they'd rather be, in the direction of where the foot's pointing. And I see it on a lot of news programs where they're wanting to get behind a desk. They've got like a full shot of the person reading the headlines, and one foot, if you look carefully, is pointing towards a desk, but they want to go and hide behind or sit behind. The other one is you come across somebody that is a bit, what's the word? They're scared that you know more about the subject than what you're talking about, or they might know more or whatever. They're putting up a shield by crossing their arms, which is another that I get a lot of. And also with the handshakes, just quickly, if I might add, I find that if you come across a big, domineering sort of person, they'll come at you, in the people I've met anyway, they'll come at you with a horizontally pointing hand, and they'll grab your hand hard and pull you in towards them, and I'll squash it quite firmly. That, to me, is a sign of dominance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. No, that's a good call, Darren. Sophie, that's often true, isn't it? Someone's just texted me saying, why do we need to touch when we meet at all? I'd rather just say hi.
Well, yes, there are a lot of people that don't like touch. But Darren is exactly right when he talks about all of those things, actually, but the foot direction, that's exactly right. Because
we should look down and look where people's feet are, right? Because if they don't want to be where they are, their feet will be pointing where they want to go. Is that right?
Yeah, our foot direction indicates where our mind is. I mean, most people aren't aware of the body language that they're doing at any given time. Some people are, but generally speaking, we're more aware of what our hands are doing rather than our feet. So feet do tend to be more honest indicators of emotion. So if you see somebody's feet pointing towards a door, for example, then that's a fairly good indicator that there's something beyond the door that they need to do, whether that's to go off and get their lunch or if they're meeting somebody else. So we don't know what it is that they want to do. We don't know what that intention is, but we know that there is something. And it's a really good indicator if you're in that situation to wrap up the conversation at that point, so that you can have more, or so that they can have more of a positive experience. It's obvious they need to be somewhere, so let them go.
All right. Mark in Sydney. Hello, Mark.
Hello, how are you?
Well.
Hi, Mark.
Hello, Sophie. Hello, Phil. I've got a question regarding learning how to read body language better. In that, I've always been a pretty keen student of Alan Peace because years ago he used to do body language shows on Channel 7. And it's never a skill that I've really been good at in life. And I did hear a statement some time ago where an American businessman never went into a business conference without his wife by his side, because his wife had the ability to pick up real easily when men that her husband was meeting with were trying to deceive her husband. So my question in essence would be twofold. Number one, do women have a natural better ability than men with interpreting body language? And two, how can I as a man get better at it?
Sophie?
Yeah. So yes, women tend to be intuitively better at reading people's emotions and understanding what's going on from an emotional level between relationships. But I think that's as a result of the social roles that they played and just being more used to it. But that doesn't mean that they're necessarily better than men at it. So men can be very good at it as well. And learning about nonverbal communication, learning what the different nonverbal cues mean, we're only looking really at the universal body language and expressions. And that's fairly easy to learn. There's not actually that much that you have to learn. The hardest part is learning to read it, so learning to observe, because most of us have spent most of our lives communicating with people and taking words at face value and not paying attention to nonverbal communication. But when you can do that, it's just like having a second layer of communication and understanding things better at an emotional level. So the best way, once you have a good understanding of nonverbal communication, the best way to is just to keep reminding yourself to observe as you go into situations. But a really good tip is to observe in a safe space. So that's when you're not actually involved in the communication, because it can take a lot of cognitive effort. And if we're holding a conversation at the same time as looking, you know, that can be difficult. But you can do it quite easily just by watching TV. So if you watch documentaries or news clips, YouTube clips, anything where emotions are quite high and you're in a safe space, you don't have to get involved, you can just observe. So that's the hardest part, and it's just a case of having practice.
Mark?
I do know, I'll just wrap up with this. I do know one thing that Alan Peace communicated was, don't concentrate so much on single body motions, but concentrate on a stream of them. In other words, a whole series together. Would that be true?
Yeah. So I would say both, because there are some single cues that can tell us a lot individually, but also we are looking for clusters of behavior, especially if we're looking for red flags. So we might see stress indicators, along with like a blocking behavior, for example. Darren earlier mentioned the arms crossed across the chest, so that's a blocking behavior. So if we see blocking behaviors with stress behaviors, then we can be pretty sure that the person is experiencing some kind of stress and discomfort. So yes, you're right there about the clusters too, yeah.
Thank you very much for your time.
No worries. Thanks, Mark. Bye-bye. Okay. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Sophie Zada's with us. We're talking about nonverbal communication and how that works. Jane says, I'm in my early 50s. I grew up in a very small country town in Tassie in the 70s. Men shook hands, women and girls got kissed, whether they liked it or not. I hated the big, wet, sloppy kisses from my aunts and uncles, but that's how it was, even today. I'm always nonplussed and flustered when somebody, male or female, offers me a handshake. In my mind, it's still odd. Thankfully, I don't work in an industry where it's a major issue. On a different tack, I don't realise how much body language I use until I'm speaking with an interpreter, which I often do in the healthcare industry. Many of them mimic my body language. Not sure why. Maybe they think it illustrates what I'm saying, or they realise that in their language and culture, my body language is meaningless, so they demonstrate in conjunction with the words I accompany them with. That's interesting, isn't it, Sophie? Because I've noticed myself when you see those interpreters interpreting at public events, they're often speaking a lot with their hands and bodies. I mean, I understand that the sign language is necessary with their hands, but they often they're often acting it out with their body as well. Is that what we're talking about here in terms of nonverbal communication?
Well, that's it's not an area that I'm too familiar with, but yes, I know what you mean. I've seen that those behaviours. It seems to me that they're just exaggerating. I mean, they could have specific meanings as well with what those specific things are doing with the body, but it could be a case of exaggerating or making a point at a certain point.
Hmm. What about the arms folded in front of you? Many people say, oh, this means you're defensive or you know, shy, you don't want to talk, or you're trying to protect yourself. Is that always the case? Because this is quite common when you're speaking to people and their arms are folded, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very common. It's something, a question that I get a lot, actually, so good that it's been brought up. Arms across the chest is a blocking behaviour, and there are many, many types of blocking behaviours, which are just when we block one area of the body with another area of the body, so the arms in that case. But we can also do it by picking up a drink, for example, so we can do it with objects too, like holding a file in front of your chest. It's the same behaviour, really. Now, there's nothing wrong with it per se. It's in a way, you can imagine it like a self-hug. But we do these when we're feeling the slightest bit of discomfort. Now, that discomfort doesn't mean that you're necessarily feeling that you're experiencing discomfort. It could be something very subtle. So it could be as subtle as a cool draft from the aircon, or the fact that a stranger has walked into the building and you don't know who that is. So we're talking about very subtle feelings that we might not consciously be in touch with at that time. And this is when that blocking behaviour comes out. So it can be perceived, and generally is perceived negatively by people who see it in displayed by us. But there's nothing wrong with it per se. Now, I generally advise people at all costs to avoid these blocking behaviours, and especially that one with the arms across the chest. So number one, because it's perceived negatively by others. But the main reason I steer people away from it is because what we do with our body can affect the way that we feel. So remember before I talked about the pride and defeat, we know that they're universal. So if you're making yourself smaller, which you are doing when your arms are across your body, then that's a defeated position. So we're telling our brain that we're feeling defeated. So if we can come out of that, if we're aware that we're doing it and we can move our bodies out of it and become more open, then that can not only change the way that we're perceived, but it can change the way that we feel internally. We tend to feel more positive emotions and can feel more confident as well.
Mm. Okay, well, Sophie Zada's with us. We're talking about non-verbal communications and how you interpret these as well. There's talk about the power pose. some people speak about that. They know the power pose and how that makes you feel. Is there such a thing?
Yes, absolutely. So the power pose is a term that was coined by researcher Amy Cuddy. And some people that have heard of the power pose will tend to think of it as having your arms and legs stretched out as far as you can, like it's like a starfish kind of thing. But what it actually is, a powerful pose is just when we make ourselves bigger than we are. So it's the opposite of a defeated position. So it's like the pride. But it doesn't have to be that exaggerated. So we can be in a power pose when we're sitting in a chair, if we've just got our arms open, like all draped on the back of the chair. These are all powerful poses. And yes, they can affect the way that you feel. Now, it is a little bit of a controversial topic, the power pose, because a couple of years ago, there were some researchers who tried to replicate Amy Cuddy's study, and they found out that they didn't get the same results. So a lot of people have now taken that as, oh, the power pose doesn't work. But that's not the case. It was just one part of the study that didn't take place again. And that was that Amy Cuddy thought that there was an increase in testosterone levels when we do the power pose. So that hasn't been replicated. But there are a lot of studies that have looked at making yourself in a more powerful pose and being sitting more upright, for example. And this research points in the direction of people perform better, people can perform better abstract thinking tasks. They come across better and feel more confident in interviews. There's one study that said that 92% of people find it easier to recall happy, optimistic memories from their own life. People rate themselves higher. People have less fear, greater self-esteem. And people can also recall more positive words over negative words. People start to use more positive words in speech. So there's a lot of interesting studies that back up this concept that how you use your body can actually affect the way that you feel. So if you go into a more powerful stance, then yes, you can tend to feel more positive emotions.
Okay. Jennifer from Melbourne. G'day, Jen.
Well, how do you do?
Well,
look, interesting that it comes after your just then the discussion about the power pose. This is a bit of history, but it's obviously stayed in my mind for all of this time. It was a work colleague, and we used to have occasional meetings in his office, and he would always take up a position, sitting in his office chair, slightly leaning back, legs fairly splayed, but with his arms behind, his hands behind
his head.
It was like an extremely casual position. Posture to take up, but I've often wondered about it. You know, that whole thing about the display, not that I could see them, but the armpits being presented. But yeah, I'm interested in Sophie's.
I know exactly what you're talking about here, Jen. Sophie, that's a common one, isn't it? I mean, men
it
who
is,
who talk with their knees apart, well apart, feet splayed,
man spreading, and
hands behind the head. Is it an aggressive pose or what is it? Or is that what some men think is a power pose?
Well, yes, it is a power pose because it's making ourselves bigger. And yes, it can come across quite aggressive. What it is, it's an outward display of confidence. So that person is feeling very confident, or if they're not, then they're faking it.
Yeah.
But I mean, generally, like if you went into a meeting and there was a lot of people in the room doing that, then if there's a lot of people in the room at the same time and one person's doing that, then that would tend to be the leader in the room. Or if the leader actually walks into the room, then the person doing it would generally come out of that position. But yes, it's an outward display of confidence, but it can come across quite aggressive or quite rude.
Yeah. What's a female example? What's the female equivalent?
Well, the females can do the same thing. It's just making yourself bigger than you are. But we tend not to see women doing poses like that as much. Women tend.
Well, I mean, women don't do that. I mean, women generally don't do that pose from. You know, I mean, for many reasons. But what might they do?
If they're showing confidence.
Yes.
It would just be an upward posture, making themselves bigger than they are. It could be hands on hips.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think like the arms like hooding behind the head and legs up kind of thing, that's extreme, or man spreading. The next one down from there might be hands on hips. But, I mean, men and women can do both. But it's, if you think about it as being different levels of, not necessarily confidence, but they tend to come across quite aggressively. So the bigger you are, sometimes it's not appropriate to be that, that confident, because it does come across as aggressive when you meet people. So it's better really to err on the side of caution and come across still as being open, so you're not doing any blocking behavior, so your arms are at your side or talking when you communicate, your legs around shoulder width apart. So this is the sweet spot. It's non-aggressive, but it's still showing confidence.
Is man spreading, I asked Jennifer, Jennifer, a lot of women find that man spreading behavior is quite aggressive and intimidating. Is that why you found it?
It wasn't so much about the legs, it was the arms.
Yeah.
This whole thing about him taking up this very casual position. And I don't know that he was actually feeling as relaxed as he wanted to present himself. not that I was going to be intimidating him, but I just felt as though he wanted to really set the situation up that he felt comfortable, very relaxed, had control of what was, you know, going to take place in whatever discussion we were going to have.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also often wondered whether that it had a sexual connotation in it, that sort of...
Yeah, that's interesting. Let's put that to Sophie too. Does it have a sexual connotation, do you think, Sophie?
It can do, yeah, especially with the legs apart as well.
Yeah.
And with pheromones being released.
Mm.
And sometimes guys put rest one leg over the other knee as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, some people do it just out of habit. We can't read too much into these things because we never know the reason why. But what we do know is that's an outward display of confidence.
Okay. We would say it's male power posing, but right. Yes, might be other. Yeah. No, thanks for raising it, Jen. I'm glad someone did because it's classic behaviour by men.
Thanks for your comment.
Thank you. Bye-bye. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Adrian in Richmond. G'day, Adrian.
Hello there, how are you?
Not bad.
I've been listening intently.
Yeah.
I'll abbreviate my story, but I'll tell you this. Hello, Sophie.
Hi.
Yep, hi, yep.
I was at a hotel one night, and I was sitting next to my brother on a bar stool, and I asked him something, and he didn't answer me, and I looked at him, and I thought, why didn't he answer me? He was looking at this bloke down at a sit-down table. And then I looked over there, and this bloke just winks at him and then blew him a kiss.
And?
Oh, then all hell broke loose. But we're talking about body language. He winks at him. We didn't have another bloke. He winks at him and blew him a kiss. So isn't that body language?
Mm, well, I guess it is, Sophie, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's an outward display. I mean, obviously he did it deliberately, so it was a deliberate signal because a lot of the signals we give off are, we don't think about them, you know, they're inadvertent, but of course we can use our body language and expressions, etc., deliberately to send specific signals to people, and obviously that's what's happened in this case.
Mm. Yes, Annie says, Phil and Sophie, I've noticed if someone doesn't like what you are saying, they will turn their head towards you and itch inside their ear. I've noticed this tens, if not hundreds of times. Is this a blocking behaviour? I use this as a cue to change tack in what I'm saying, which I've always found as positive results because the person is telling you they don't like what I'm saying. Is that a thing?
Well, the best thing there is that you actually use this as a guide to change your own behaviour, because that's where the magic lies in reading body language. It's only when you observe something and actually do something about it, which is generally changing your own body language or response, of where the magic lies. It's not in just observing what you see. But itching in the ear is probably a stress behaviour, but it could be a blocking behaviour as well, because we are, in a sense, blocking a part of the body. But really, I would take that as a stress indicator. So, again, you might experience stress if someone's hit on the wrong topic.
Right, okay. All right, Nick, Nick on man spreading. Yes, Nick?
Hi, I'm really enjoying the conversation. I was just with the man spreading, I'm sure there's a bit of dominance thing going on, but like just basic anatomy, like men's hips are narrower, and their reproductive organs are on the outside, and then women's hips are wider, but their reproductive organs are on the inside. So
what you're saying is that it's more comfortable for men to sit with their knees apart.
Yes, absolutely, because you know they're very sensitive and they have to be a lower temperature to do their job. So for me, it just seems that that's just how it's got to be to maintain health. Like,
yeah, no, I get it. Sophie?
Yeah, on the other side of that, there's also a lot of women don't sit with their legs open, and this is probably because of social norms again. You know,
little girls are taught not to do that, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And even if we haven't directly been taught that, we see other women and don't see them doing it.
Oh.
So... That's probably the reason why, you know, if that wasn't there, then women might be doing women spreading. But generally, when we are taking up more space, it is more of a confidence and dominance thing, yes. But generally speaking, I would say that men feel more confident and dominant than women do.
Just a final thought, I'll get over here. I'm thinking of the Sharon Stone famous scene in that movie.
Oh, yes.
Basic Instinct. I think there's a pretty, that's for me, that's the reason why I've been.
Although that was just a straight out, that was a straight out sexual come on, wasn't it? That was
I guess maybe that's the basic reason why women don't do it, I guess. But yeah. All right, thank you.
Right. Thanks, Nick. Yeah, interesting. Carol is in Coffs Harbour. Hi, Carol.
This very interesting topic. I'm just wondering if I could have an educated response to somebody who, well, a male who is in an environment where there's a lot of females around, and it was just me in the corridor this particular day, and he walked towards me pounding his chest like a silverback, and I thought, that really wasn't... I've never seen anybody do that in a work environment.
I don't think I have either. Sophie, have you?
Yeah, just how did it make you feel when you saw that?
Oh, revolted. Repulsed. Because we've had some very threatening conversations about whether our chosen career is really suitable for us. And, you know, it's not a very healthy atmosphere. But to have that happen in front of me, I thought, I don't think I've got the problem, but then you never know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a behaviour that we don't see often, not in humans anyway. But yes, it's an outward display of dominance, and it's a very exaggerated display.
Hmm. What is eye-blocking behaviour, Sophie?
So eye-blocking is... Well, it looks different in adults and children. So let me start with explaining what it is with children. In children, when they're faced with something that they don't like, they literally do a physical eye blocking. So they put their hands up to their eyes and cover their eyes. And we know that this is a universal gesture because even congenitally blind children do this. Now, as children grow up, you know, they start off with very blatant behaviours such as that one, but as they grow up they learn to fit in with social norms, and a lot of this is just by observation. So as we grow up we learn to conceal our emotions and how we feel about things, so that eye blocking behaviour, it's still the same behaviour but it starts to look a little bit different. And by the time we've reached adulthood, the eye-blocking behaviour has the same meaning, but it looks just like a long blink. So it's a closing of the eyes for longer than a blink. It means the same thing. Someone's been faced with something that they don't like, or it's a higher level of discomfort. And it's very, very common. Most people will probably see this a few times throughout the day. But if you see that, because you know that it comes within the moment, because all nonverbal behaviours come at that moment in response to like an object, a topic or a person, then we know that there's something wrong at that point. So it can be a good guide to change your own behaviour or your own response at that point, which could be as simple as changing the topic.
Mm. Yes, all right. Well, just finally, because time has vanished on us, unfortunately, but can you make yourself be a better reader of nonverbal gestures? And what are the top tips to do that?
Well, first step is learning nonverbal behaviours. And second step, which is the big one, the hardest part, is learning to observe. So you need to start opening your eyes as you're having interactions. But remember the key tip that I said earlier about watching TV and doing it in a safe environment where you don't have to participate in the conversation. So it's just a case of keep reminding yourself to look out for those cues once you know the meaning behind them.
Mm. I wonder whether in these days of Zoom meetings, et cetera, when people often can just turn their video off, we're getting perhaps less attuned to these body language sort of signals. Signals, do you think?
Possibly, but I mean, it's a little bit different communicating on Zoom because all you generally see is the face. You have a big face staring at you, and quite possibly the upper torso. So we're not reading body language on the whole. It's more of a case of facial expressions and different nonverbal cues that are seen in the face. But we can certainly hide behind that. And I think in some ways it's a good thing that we have that opportunity. but all within reason, there is sometimes when that's not appropriate and it's better to show up in person.
Sure, of course. All right, Sophie, it's been terrific to talk with you. And thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sophie Zada is a Perth-based nonverbal communication specialist. Thank you for the questions too and the chat, particularly the text chat. Very interesting. I'm glad we sorted out man spreading and some other common ones as well.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.